Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and this is, as I say, CIUT.FM. Please donate, by the way. We're still raising funds throughout June. Our guest is Stephen Gowans, and Stephen Gowans has been writing about this matter of the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, and has also taken up this new subject of it's the American decision to see if they can offload their responsibilities for the havoc that occurred in the United States with loss of more than 500,000 lives. And Stephen has been focused on kind of parsing out what we ought to be talking about. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phil.
You've written two articles in the past few days, and I believe you indicated you may have another one shortly. So we're really glad that you're doing this. The piece about the issue of the pandemic, I'm trying to find a title here. Oh, yes. You begin with a nice quote, and it says, if a scandal is being thuggishly covered up by a regime more interested in propaganda than human life, the United States is the regime. The scandal is the unnecessary deaths of over 500,000 U.S. citizens. And the propaganda is Biden's Wuhan lab leak hypothesis. Your opening paragraph, China is a paragon in dealing with the novel coronavirus pandemic, the country all others ought to emulate. Its COVID-19 elimination strategy brought community transmission to a virtual halt, allowing the country to reopen quickly and return to the path of robust economic growth. What you're writing, it seems very obvious. The polls are running the opposite direction. They are saying that now, in the past, I guess, 3 or 4 months, Americans have moved from believing, fewer believing that the COVID started in a lab in China to now believing that it did. And so, if you could explain to us, how did we get from talking about a pandemic and all that loss of life and who caused it to discussing 3 or 4 columns written by American newspapermen that has moved public opinion? How did that happen?
And there are quite a number of columns that have been written by U.S. journalists on this. I mean, there are dozens and dozens and dozens. And why has it happened? I mean, it should be no secret to anyone that the United States regards China as an enemy. Might not say enemy, might talk about rival or near peer competitor, but it's clear that China is within Washington's crosshairs. And in fact, just yesterday, Joe Biden had an editorial in the Washington Post in which he made this claim again that there's a competition with China, that China's, it's an enemy nation. Again, as I said, he doesn't use enemy nation, but that's the idea. But also that there's a challenge. Presents this as a challenge, what I call the China challenge. He seems to recognize that there's a China challenge to US supremacy in the world and that something must be done about it. And so there's a fight back against China. And the fight back has a positive form and a negative form. The positive form is that the Biden administration plans to emulate China through industrial planning and major investments in infrastructure to, as Biden puts it, deliver real results for our people in a rapidly changing world. Another part of the fight is negative. So it involves, you know, it's to undermine China's economic growth through tariffs, targeting Chinese companies like Huawei for disruption, blocking Chinese investors from buying Western economic assets, and also preventing Western investors from investing in a number of Chinese firms. But additionally, Washington wants to discredit China. And one way to do that is to blame Beijing for the pandemic. And, you know, Trump made the efforts in this regard. I mean, referring to COVID-19 as the Wuhan flu, the Kung flu, Chinese virus, and then he was the one who suggested initially that the virus leaked from a Wuhan lab. Now Biden has resurrected Trump's Wuhan lab leak theory, and US journalists have taken this up and now regard it as a credible theory, and they've written dozens and dozens of features on this. But, you know, there's an insight into Washington's playbook on discrediting China, which may have been provided on June 4th in the Washington Post by a senior fellow for global health at the Council on Foreign Relations. And he wrote an article titled, or it's an editorial, China Could Pay If Nations Come to Believe That the Virus Leaked from the Lab. Now, I should say the Council of Foreign Relations is, it's a Wall Street funded and directed think tank that provides policy advice to the State Department. And it's firmly interlocked with the US foreign policy establishment and with the Biden administration. Many members of the Biden administration are longtime members of the Council on Foreign Relations, including the US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. So the author of this article, or editorial from the Council on Foreign Relations, notes that, and I'll quote him directly, China has until now enjoyed prestige on the world stage for its containment of the pandemic, especially compared with many Western countries. But he adds, if missteps by Chinese scientists were seen to be the cause of the pandemic, such praise would quickly fade. He goes on to add, even if a belief in a cover-up without firm evidence of wrongdoing were created, this would be damaging. And then he goes on to say, you know, if the US intelligence community were seen as exposing a Chinese cover-up, it could reestablish America's reputation for competence. What implied in all of this is that the United States' reputation for competence has been severely damaged by its failure to protect American lives during the pandemic. And something must be done to recover US prestige and also to damage China's reputation. But he goes on to argue that there's some benefits to fostering a belief in a Chinese cover-up, even if there's no firm evidence. And he enumerates them. He says there are four. The first is this could precipitate a free fall in China's relationship with the outside world. As it could provide a pretext for the United States to boycott the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics. It says it would raise questions in China about whether the Communist Party is fit to rule. And it would force China to close in on itself in a fit of angry isolation as it was shunned by the rest of the world. So in other words, there are strong reasons for Washington. Makes no secret about viewing China as an enemy to be contained and countered. Strong reasons to foster a belief in a cover-up, according to a senior fellow at the leading U.S. foreign policy think tank.
I'm sorry, the author again is who?
The author is one of the fellows of Global Health. He's a Chinese expatriate. Yes, an expatriate. He's a professor at a U.S. university. and also a fellow with a significant think tank. Mm-hmm.
And this is in Foreign Policy reprinted somewhere else as well?
I can't say whether it is or not. I don't know. But I mean, what this does, it at the very least provides some insight into the kind of thinking that goes on within foreign policy circles in the United States.
It sounded like a game plan.
Yeah, exactly. If not actually delineating a game plan that the White House is following.
I think we have to assume they're going to, they do intend to prevent the Winter Olympics taking place in Beijing. Certainly in Canada, there's they've already said they commit genocide, and that if you have, and here also we have political leaders. The Conservative Party, by the way, has been completely in step with the Trump thesis from day one. Because they don't pay much attention to Canadian politicians, but they've never even missed a step. They've said it was sort of a devilish plot. And of course, we have to boycott the Olympics and preferably transfer the Olympics to Canada, where genocide has never happened. And it is a nasty situation. I guess among the most bothersome things about this has been the extent to which people with reputations as independent journalists have bought into it. I just read a piece by Jonathan Cook in Counterpunch, and he says that the revelations brought by Nicholas Wade blew the doors off, and Biden was forced to then say something. Whereas, I mean, I don't know where Mr. Cook, Jonathan Cook lives, but an ordinary person who follows politics knows that Biden has been keeping that little dagger in his pocket from the beginning, always saying, well, we don't know, we should look into it, and saying we have to go in there. So Biden hasn't exactly been asleep on this file. But Jonathan Cook actually believes that, is it Michael Wade or Jonathan Wade who?
In the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist.
Yeah, and we spoke this a couple of weeks ago. I mean, good God.
Yeah, well, you know, Jonathan Cook also believes that vitamin D cures COVID-19 as well. So.
Ah, there's a nasty detail. But it is striking. You've probably noticed that there have been writers who, partly it was the Trump syndrome, that anything Trump said, they explain their madness now by saying, well, because it was Trump, we all reject it. But now we've recovered our senses and Biden says it, so it must be true. I mean, that's a scary situation we find ourselves in, at least in the English speaking world. I have to say, they refer to the world. I don't see any comments around the world echoing the Americans. The Americans are looking in the mirror primarily.
Well, you know, Jonathan Cook and commenting on the Wade article, as I said, there are a number of articles and they're written by journalists who think that they have the ratiocinative powers of Sherlock Holmes and that they can deduce reality without reference to any kind of empirical data. And so they spin nice stories based on interviews, selective interviews with certain virologists, microbiologists who share their particular point of view. But if you actually delve into the literature, you'll see that there are some virologists who believe that a lab leak at Wuhan perhaps is credible, and others who dismiss it entirely. But these are journalists wading into waters that are over their heads. I mean, I recognize that I'm over my head. I don't have the competence to to wade into the virological literature. But if I do look at it, I know that there are two competing views, but I also know there's no evidence. And this is something that you always have to come back to. There's absolutely no evidence that there was a lab leak at the in Wuhan. So you can speculate all you want, and that's what's being done. This is simply speculation and theorizing and talking about it's a possibility. Well, possibilities don't make it real. And I think it also, all this discussion becomes a red herring and diverts us from the real question. I mean, there are really two questions here. One question, and they're not the same question. One question is, where did the virus come from? And the second question is, how did the pandemic start? And those two questions are being conflated. We don't know where the virus came from, and we may never know where the virus came from, but we do know how the pandemic started, which is the far more consequential question. And we know the pandemic started when Chinese doctors and scientists provided information showing a deadly virus had emerged that had no treatment and could be passed between people. And the United States and Canada and Europe did precious little, unwilling to disrupt business activity or the continued tranquil digestion of profits. And had these countries followed the Chinese model of acting swiftly and decisively to eliminate community transmission, not only would they have been able to safely open their economies fairly quickly as the Chinese did, but they would have spared the world a deadly pandemic, which has already killed more than 3.7 million people. So how did the pandemic start? It started through the inaction of the United States, Canada, and Europe. They are the countries and the governments that unleashed this deadly pandemic upon the world. Mm-hmm. And there's no, I mean, this is plain. We don't have to speculate about this. We have lots of evidence for this, but we'll never have any evidence. Well, I can't say we'll never, but it's unlikely that we'll ever actually know where the virus came from. In the same way, we don't know where virus that caused the 1918 flu pandemic came from. Yeah. Over a century later, we don't know.
No, that's the striking part. We did this with AIDS. As a matter of fact, the documentary films were made targeting one individual, turned out to be a legend. And they treated it as, oh, well, we finally found out. That was like 20 years after. But even then, they were wrong. I think it's really important. Your June 5th article, and it's, by the way, with Stephen Gowans, what's left. This thing about responsibility, if you took the thesis and start with Trump and an American government that was very hostile to China already, and they were following on the Obama policy of the pivot towards China in Asia, which has been standard policy without alteration to this day. Given that hostility and the fact that, there's been an outbreak, then you would have, had they believed that, they would have gone completely into a full force, we got to save ourselves, they're trying to get us. You know, get every man up, everybody do their, you know, get the wardens out on the street corners blowing whistles, and because we have to control it, right? We don't want it to spread to us, because we're being attacked. Mm-hmm. But that is not what they thought. They were hoping that the Chinese actually would probably have a Chinese pandemic and they would be miserable. And a matter of fact, I did read commentary and articles in the Globe saying, well, you know, that's the way Chinese run things. They have these markets that are dangerous, and now they got a big problem, and it's going to be out of control. Meanwhile, we'll be protected, as always in the 19th century, by the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans. But they didn't behave responsibly in protecting the population. Your point in the first article on June 1st about just, you know, getting those two words clear, eliminate it, policy of elimination, and the policy of mitigation, which is, you quote The Lancet, don't do it. Don't. The Lancet said mitigation is not a good strategy because you will get variants, and you will have, because of the rollout of the of your vaccines, it's, you're going to fail. That struck me that you had really, you say the Chinese actually had a different public health strategy, and it's traceable to the kind of social system they've got.
Yeah, and I think it was the British Medical Journal that I identified three basic strategies. One was no community transmission, which is the strategy that China followed. The other was controlled community transmission, which was the one that was followed by the United States and Canada and many European countries. And then there was the uncontrolled community transmission pursued by Brazil. But it was The Lancet that said the no community transmission approach, the one that China followed, was superior on three grounds: in terms of health, because you prevented deaths. Secondly, in terms of the economy, because it allowed you to open the economy quickly. And third, in terms of civil liberties. And how was it superior in terms of civil liberties? Because you had a short lockdown, a very decisive, and some would say draconian lockdown, but maybe draconian, well, we'll say a severe lockdown, but severe commensurate with the threat. But that lockdown was over quickly, that people could get back to their normal lives. So on these three grounds, The Lancet regarded this as the superior public health strategy. And I mean, it clearly is the superior strategy. Also one that, had it been followed by the United States, would have prevented the deaths of over 550,000 people.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, if you want to talk about regimes that are more interested in propaganda than human life, than a regime that allows 550,000 citizens to die who shouldn't have died, well, that's a regime that's more interested in propaganda than human life. And by the way, this, the idea about a scandal as being thuggishly covered up by a regime more interested in propaganda than human life, I turned that on its head. That comes from Brett Stevens, a columnist in the New York Times, who is using that to apply to China, saying that if the cover-up is true, then what we're talking about is a scandal thuggishly covered up by a regime more interested in propaganda than human life. And yet that phrase fits the United States far better than it fits China, because we have no evidence to suggest that China has behaved in the ways that Stevens is suggesting or using innuendo to suggest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recall all the American politicians saying, well, look, you know, we can't turn off the economy. We got to get this thing going. And of course, it was the Democratic Party led states of California and New York that had the worst numbers. And by the way, in your June 5th article, and this is Stephen Gowans, you call for, you know, let's investigate who failed in the pandemic, failed to prevent it. But this, not going to be a committee formed to do that. Here we have at this matter of the indigenous tragedy in Canada being revealed. Well, we've had all sorts of talk about, well, let's look into it. They don't actually ever do it. Nothing ever actually happens. They just sort of, it's like somebody stirring soup. They just, okay, give it another stir and then hope it doesn't boil over.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we want to go on a fishing expedition to gather data with the aim of pillorying, the aim of discrediting China. And this is why we have this call for the so-called unrestricted international investigation, to answer the question, where did the virus come from? But they're not going to answer the question, how did the pandemic start? But that's the question that needs to be addressed. How did the pandemic start? As I said, we know how it started. It was started through the inaction of the United States, Canada, and Europe. But maybe we ought to have an inquiry to identify why those countries and regions followed not the dictum, you know, public health is the highest law, but the principle private profit is the highest good.
Yes.
And the great irony here is in the reluctance to shut down business and to disrupt the tranquil digestion of profits, the result has been, you know, this succession of shutdowns, which has been far less effective than the Chinese model, which was to shut down entirely for a short period and then open up.
Yes, they identify, trace, all these words. You notice I haven't heard them in for a year. When the Chinese were doing it, and a Canadian doctor was one of the people from the World Health Organization who visited and said, now that's how to do it. You have to identify and isolate, and then I can't even remember all the little formula because it's been so long since I heard it, but you have to track the contacts and such things. That went right out the window because they looked at each other and said, we can't do that. You'd have to have a public health system to do that. We don't have a public health system. And we would get in the way of business. And by the way, that doctor remains a no name in Canada. And he was pilloried by a committee of the Canadian Parliament. They are still on the books to be demand attendance to explain why he said nice things. So apropos of your point, we need to look into this. He would be one of the people who you would call number one. But unfortunately, they do want to call him, and they want to call him because he might say that the policy they followed was the right policy. And he said it early. He said that February, March of 20. Very early, in order to do the duty that you're talking about. Spread the word, this is how to do it. I want to say further on this, because now we've moved into the vaccine territory. Now this country that you talk about, the United States, which failed its people miserably, they have a tremendous excess of vaccines. And bad China, who they say is the origin, they also have vaccines. So tell us who's sharing their vaccine with the world.
Well, this is another way in which the United States has been embarrassed by China's greater competence. I mean, the United States tries to present itself as having a leadership role in vaccines. And yet China has produced more doses than the United States and shared more doses with the rest of the world.
Quadruple, right? I mean, they like...
The United States only wants to share very few doses, only the doses it doesn't want with the rest of the world. But, you know, it claims to have this vaccine leadership. It celebrates itself. But the facts contradict its self-proclaimed leadership role. Mm-hmm. So it's... I mean, when you compare China with the United States on a number of grounds, and Washington seems to know this, although it doesn't want to talk about it, Washington comes out short. I mean, Biden makes allusions to this, saying that there's a challenge from China, but he doesn't often spell out what the challenge is. I mean, one of the challenges is that China has been very effective in lifting tens of millions of people out of poverty and raising the standard of living of the Chinese. So the Chinese are now sanguine, they're optimistic about the future. They expect their standard of living to continue to rise. Juxtapose that against the United States, where there's no optimism, that people have been left behind. They're in low wage, precarious jobs. So there is a US failure, an abject US failure, and a remarkable or praiseworthy Chinese success. And you go down the list, you see Chinese success after success and U.S. failure after failure.
Yes. You do see an erosion once continually of this idea that there is the old international community referred to by our prime minister and the president of the United States, the prime minister of Britain. And they really just mean themselves. Because actually, the Western world, after all, they're in a state of fear. They still have this. We're already, America is entering, clearly walked into a new phase where it's going to be called, the British used to say, I'm all right, Jack. We can all go to the ball game and everything is fine. And we can talk about it as history. Meanwhile, the rest of the world is deeply embedded in the COVID crisis. There is no wide distribution of vaccines reaching the masses of Africa, South America.
Yeah, but we could argue that the United States is also deeply in the morass of the pandemic and is deluding itself. I mean, it still has 500 people dying of COVID per day on average. And you compare the number of deaths per million in the United States to say Japan or South Korea or Vietnam or China or Australia. The United States is this tops these countries in terms of number of deaths per million.
Yeah.
And those countries have a very small or modest vaccine rollout. And here we have the United States crowing about its vaccine rollout and how the vaccines are pushing back the boundaries of the pandemic. And as you said, everything's okay now, but it isn't.
No, it's not. Actually, by the way, that point about variants, that clearly is a menace to the so-called success because it has come, it has not been efficiently distributed. And the timing of it means that there'll be gaps. So it'll become something like the flu, right? Oh, it's flu season. It's going to be COVID season because they didn't want to eliminate it. It seems apparent. We're speaking to Stephen Gallons, and I should say in a few minutes, I've noticed something about this gentleman, Fauci, who seems to be, has saint status or something, although the Americans debate about him because they can't tell which party he might favor off from time to time. But I noticed something about him which I thought was repulsive. He recently had himself quoted in an American journal. He said he would call on China to report on the, turn over the medical records of the doctors, three doctors who might have contracted something in the November 2019, and then of six minors that fell ill in 2012. And I wonder, Stephen, where does he get off? That could only be based on a US intel report, which is not his domain exactly. Why would he believe it? And how could he, on the basis of that, speak to his peers in China as though they're somehow suspects who have to disclose to him information, which, by the way, you use the term, that's clearly a fishing expedition, because if they were to give you all medical records, what would you find? Something more to talk about, right? It's an endless game, but Fauci, of all people, put himself into this.
Yeah, and the report that there were employees of one of the Wuhan laboratories that were ill and hospitalized in the fall, that report comes, that's an intelligence report, as you said, from a U.S. ally. And before, this has been bruited about, or the story was seen as credible, it was pointed out that no one really knew whether this intelligence was credible. And it was kind of regarded with some skepticism by the US intelligence community. So, it could be something, anyway. And again, another allegation without evidence, just a way of strengthening this innuendo and creating a belief without firm intelligence that something was going on in Wuhan and that the pandemic is really the Wuhan flu.
You know, again, if we were dealing with this, if this were serious, he has peers. Nobody, these are not criminals. These are peers. He's been working with them in international organizations. And the World Health Organization has asked people, stop the politics, please. That's what the WHO's their official position. Please stop politicizing this. And then he crosses the line and speaks publicly of a peer without saying, by the way, I called him because that's what we do, and said, do you have records? And then he could say, I don't have any such record. And Fauci could say, I've actually spoken to the man. Didn't have a record. That was respectful.
There's an interesting or typical double standard here. I mean, what if the Chinese called for the medical records of people working at the many of the virological laboratories, say at the name escapes me, the one in Maryland.
Dietrich,
yes. I mean, if the Chinese had called for that, it would have been dismissed, called a fishing expedition, or, you know, the Chinese trying to divert attention from whatever. So there's this clear double standard, as if US inquiries are always impartial, but, you know, Chinese allegations are clearly political.
Yes. Yeah, these reports that we're reading say, well, you know, the World Health Organization team that visited China, half of its members were Chinese. And you say, yes.
Well, not only that, I mean, they said half the member were Chinese, therefore their political or their independence, their scientific independence was in question.
Exactly. It's pure racist.
Yes, it is, since they didn't.
Unadulterated racism. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans. Gowans has two articles and a third one coming. That's true, right? I'm not.
Yes, it's true.
Good. It will be out soon. Please go to What's Left and read that. But the last point, Stephen, I've had the thought recently about this term that's been used for half a century by various people in the Ivy Leagues. And they say, you know, America's engaged in a clash of civilizations, and they refer to Islam and then China. It strikes me that actually what we're having here is a clash with a civilization. That is, the barbarians have run into a civilization. And the COVID story is one of the civilization knew what to do for its people, and the barbarians said, well, let them die.
Well, that's true.
Pardon that. That's a very clumsy editorial, but I mean, isn't that... Doesn't this strike you? I mean, who's civilized?
No, absolutely. I mean, as I pointed out, I mean, there are almost 600,000 preventable COVID deaths in the United States. That's a scandal. And there ought to be an inquiry into why that's come about.
Yeah. Well,
and also a recognition of the success of the Chinese model and the Chinese approach to the pandemic.
Yeah. Well, if it's to be carried out correctly, in my opinion, is the Chinese and the Vietnamese and the North Koreans and Cubans should get together and look into what caused the pandemic in the United States. And I would trust it. Stephen, it's great talking to you. Your articles are very important. I look forward to more of them. Thank you.
Thank you.